Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the payoff.
Yeah. We're on the highway to hell. Steve Austin, The Undertaker, SummerSlam, season 11, 1998. What's going on, buddy? How are you?
We're gonna hear that song. We got to talk about this song too. It's part of the show sometimes. Like we are definitely on the highway to hell with this show. Absolutely.
Yeah, this is gonna be a fun one. Let's just kick it off. Why is it on the list? I don't know if you picked it or I picked it.
I had a match we'll talk about on this one, but I had a first blood match between these two guys, and then we said no, let's swap it out. So I actually think this was your pick on this one.
Well, I remember the vignette or the kind of promo right before the match, the Highway to Hell stuff, which was awesome. I mean, this is kind of like height of the Attitude Era in a lot of ways. You know, two first ballot Hall of Famers, arguably two guys that could end up on your or my Mount Rushmore. I mean, this is big time. So really fun show, Madison Square Garden. I'm looking forward to it. And I'll tell you the other reason I'm really looking forward to this too, especially as you walk through the build, is I don't even know if I told you this. I've been rewatching that Monday Night Wars series on Peacock. I mean, obviously I watched it before, and obviously I've seen just about every clip that they've shown, but it's pretty fun to go back and watch those, even if you've seen them before. I mean, there's just so much stuff, you know, and some of this you forget. So it's been a good primer, I guess, just for this era. I'm really pumped to cover this one.
Yeah, I'm glad we actually did swap this one for the first blood match, because this was and we'll talk about it. This was really the height of the Austin era, like in the McMahon feud. And there was so much going on during this time in 1998 between like these players. And so I actually think we would kind of be like jumping the gun a little bit, and that we're going to cover and it's still on our list for one day, but the fully loaded 1999 first blood match between Stone Cold and Undertaker. And we said, no, let's actually do this. And so I'm actually glad we're doing this, because it's a little bit, I say, earlier in the feud. It had been a long running feud. It continued to be a long running feud, which, you know, we'll talk about. But I'm glad like we're kind of covering this one at this point. It makes a little bit more sense just in the kind of timeline and kind of things that are happening. And, you know, we try and do, it's a SummerSlam match. We try and cover SummerSlam. We're on the road to SummerSlam right now. We still got feels like a few weeks still. It almost feels like a downtime in wrestling. We got July was a packed month, and then there, you know, we got SummerSlam this month. You know, there's the NWA pay-per-view, the all women's, but like, it's almost like a down week this week. There's not a ton going on in wrestling, which just feels odd. Rampage is next week. Yeah.
At the time of recording, there's not a lot going on in wrestling, but it just seems like there's a lot of big names and big things that could be happening over the coming weeks or months in the business, which we can talk about more during the match. I was thinking of you this morning when I set out my manscape equipment. I'm long overdue. So I've got to probably this afternoon or this evening take care of business. But, you know, that's the nice thing about the stuff is, I mean, in about 3 minutes, I can take care of myself for about 3 weeks. So it couldn't be any easier or faster.
Well, and I have to give credit where credit's due here. My buddy Kyle, actually, he texted me like just a couple days ago, actually, was like, hey, what's the code? Can I use it? I said, yeah, of course, man. Like, why wouldn't you? So that code, as we all know, it's 20% off, free shipping. The code is payoff. He said, but can you please make a joke for me too when next time you're reading the ad? I said, well, it depends on what it is. He said, you know, and so we were going back and forth. He's like, well, it's about the Olympics. I said, all right. He goes, can you just make sure to tell everyone that, like, that, you know, whether or not their balls, could win a gold medal. And I said, you know what? Sure. I'll bring it up. I'll say. And so if you want gold medal balls, like, you know, with the Olympics going on, it's a big focus for everyone right now. Everyone needs to use that promo code payoff, 20% off, free shipping as well too. Like, you know, Tom and I say it all the time and you guys hear it, you know, believe it. We're no bullshit about these products. Like, we like the partnership here. It's great stuff. Like, Tom, it takes 3 minutes, you know, first time might take five, but you don't have to worry about it. They're absolutely worth it. You got the Lawnmower 4.0, 3.0, Weed Whacker. Tom and I have invested in stuff anyways and used our own code to buy stuff. So it's definitely worth it on all that different stuff. And if you want those gold medal balls, promo code payoff at manscaped.com. So, Tom.
Yeah, it's 20% off everything. So
that's right. Everything.
Good. Yep. Good stuff. Any other notes that we need to share? Can we get right into the build?
I don't know. I don't think so. I will admit we did not have, because our episode last week was CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. We did not have inside info and we recorded that one and picked that one of how much they were going to be in the news, but we can talk about that during the match. But
yeah, isn't that ironic? I didn't even.
Good timing. Yeah. I know. I was thinking about that actually the other day. I was like, damn, we did good on that. So yeah, but I say, hey man, all right, let's get into it.
All right. It's time for the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
All right, dude, what did I say? We're at the Garden, Madison Square Garden, August 30th, 1998. Jeff, I don't know if you have any memories of this, but I know for me, I think more often than not, SummerSlam would be the night before I would start school.
That sounds about right. I went to school in Michigan, so we were actually typically after Labor Day. So we had a little bit more time than that. But yes, I'm with you of kind of, it was that last kind of hurrah. Absolutely.
So this was always a hard sell for me because it was like, hey, Ma, I need, you know, $40 or $30 and a hall pass to stay up until, I guess what, 11 o'clock my time. To watch this the night before the first day of school.
That's when they would have had those hard stops. Yeah. And this was in 1998, this price was $29.95. Thank you, WrestleNomics.
There you go. Yeah, God, it's interesting. You know, it's like we complain about AEW pay-per-views being $50-$60 or whatever, but over the course of the year, if you buy those four big mega shows,
yep,
you're still in for it less than you would be for ordering all the wrestling pay-per-views during the Attitude Era. And that's just WWE. That's not even, you know, WCW. I mean, it's just crazy. If you were a big wrestling fan back in the day, I mean, you could theoretically spend $700 or more on wrestling pay-per-views.
Yep. The average price, it was $19.95 for a B show and $29.95 up until about 2001 for like an A show pay-per-view.
Interesting. I mean, yeah, you could spend a lot of money on these.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get to the show. D'Lo Brown's your Euro champ, beats Val Venus by DQ, 15 minutes. You know, it's just, and I know we're not professional wrestling bookers and we've never done it, so blah, blah, blah. But it's like, you just wonder, man, why start off a show with a 15-minute match that ends in a schmoz? Like, was it going to kill Val Venus's like push and gimmick if he took a pinfall?
And I remember liking D'Lo as the European champ. I feel like he held it for a while, but yeah.
Yeah, he did. He did. The Oddities, who, I mean, gosh, Giant Silva, Golga Kurrigan, they're accompanied by Luna Vachon, Shaggy 2 Dope, and Violent J. They're going to beat Kai and Tai in a 4-on-3 handicap match. They got 10 minutes in that one.
If you want to get the crowd into it, bring out the Insane Clown Posse. Like, you know, that's what you need for your second match of the night. Yeah.
X-Pac would defeat Jeff Jarrett in a hair versus hair match in 11 minutes. I don't remember that match at all. But I guess that's how Jarrett, you know, went from long hair to short hair. Edge and Sable defeated Jackie and Mark Mero in a mixed tag match. They went 8 minutes. Then we had that Lion's Den match. That was Ken Shamrock defeating Owen Hart by submission in a kind of a octagon type setup there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. New Age Outlaws are going to win a Falls Count Anywhere match to win the tag team championship. They beat Mankind in a 2-on-1 match. 5 minutes. They didn't go long. And then there was plenty of time for these last two matches, which, I mean, really were like kind of a semi-main event, a co-main event in a lot of ways. And again, I'm, you know, the good old days of the Intercontinental Championship really meaning something. Triple H is going to defeat The Rock with China's help to win the Intercontinental title match. You know, this was a big match for both of these guys because, you know, at the time, neither was, you know, a main eventer. Mm-hmm. But they were right there, really, really knocking on the door. And, you know, we're coming off of WrestleMania 14. So both of them are kind of in this IC title below the main event. You know, Brett's gone. Sean's now gone. You have Austin. You have Taker. McMahon's running around. But, you know, underneath that, these guys were not main eventers at the time. But as we discussed, this really elevated both guys. And this was a classic case of both men coming out of a match stronger. And then the main event, we have Steve Austin, who's your champion, against The Undertaker. And we're going to cover this 20-minute match. So, in terms of the star ratings for this, you know, really not much to get excited about. The highest rated match was the ladder match, the IC title match. Then this main event, Shamrock and Owen Hart did okay. Otherwise, as you can probably imagine, not the best show. And again, I think, Jeff, this is an example of how sometimes we really don't remember anything in the attitude not being perfect. So I think sometimes we forget, you know, the oddities, you know, weren't exactly the best workers. Edge and Sable against Jackie and Mark Mero wasn't exactly tearing down the house. You know, so you go through this, and again, I'm not saying that the era we live in now is better by any means, but what I am saying is that, you know, if you look at the wrestling and you look at the quality of the matches, yeah, there were storylines and it was interesting and Raw was fun and it was Crash TV, but some of these pay-per-views were like, if you ordered this to see 3 hours of entertainment, you really only got a good hour, which was the final hour of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. In retrospect, we can see that now, you know, 2020, but at the time, yeah, but yeah, just crazy to think about how it is now.
So big gate for this show. It was the third largest behind WrestleMania, which was in Boston, and, you know, obviously massive, massive gate there, as WrestleMania always is. And then that Hogan Goldberg Georgia Dome house, which obviously was massive as well. Mm-hmm. So storyline standpoint, I mean, we are just thick into Attitude Era.
Yeah.
Austin Era has begun. How do we get to these two wrestling it at SummerSlam? And gosh, I guess, was there even any other option? It just seemed like they were the two biggest stars in the company at the time. So yeah, let's put them together.
And that's a good way to put it. Yeah. And as we're kind of talking through some of this, you'll see kind of how it plays out. And so it was actually, so it started, we got King of the Ring, 1998 is when we're going to pick this one up. Austin actually lost his championship to Kane on that pay-per-view. This was the first blood match. When he ended up winning it back the next night, actually. So
and where did he win it back? Where did he win it back the next night?
At that King of the Ring.
Michigan.
Oh yeah. Okay. Was it?
That was the Zamboni night. Yeah. It was the night after King of the Ring was the Zamboni night.
No. And so I actually have it in the aftermath. And so it's a later show, but you're close. Yes. And so, let's see, we'll get there. I promise.
Okay.
I made sure to double check it. Yeah. It was actually after an In Your House in September. So, but you're close. Yes. So,
damn it.
I know, it's all right, man. So, but anyway, so I was curious. It's been a while too. Trivia time. So for you, Tom, because this is not First Blood, but because this is where we're starting, do you have a guess at how many First Blood matches WWE, WWF held in its history? How many First Blood matches have there been? This one at King of the Ring being the first.
I mean, there haven't been five. I'm going to guess four.
10.
Really?
Yeah. And I was surprised by that too. I actually thought, yeah. And so when these two were talking about, and oddly enough, that King of the Ring, Tom, was in Pittsburgh. And so hometown for you back in June 1998.
It was such a stupid stipulation. It was stupid to put the title on Kane. Yep. It's like, and I guess when they were laying that show out, they probably didn't think that the most iconic thing in the history of wrestling was going to happen. But it's like, you almost wonder why Vince didn't call an audible and he said, hey, we got to figure out a way to get Kane to bleed and drip blood and
all that,
something. Because it's like, what's the point of doing this? I also thought it was stupid, Jeff, that they brought Foley back out for the main event of that one. It's like, just have Austin beat Kane. Who cares? But
yeah, so it wasn't clean. I'll say so that this was the, or that was the first blood. The last one, it was actually June 1st, 2008. It was John Cena beating JBL at One Night Stand. So that was the 10th. And there were some other ones in there at WCW and things like that, but that's where you got to that one. So, but anyway, like you said, so after this one, like you said, and this was, you know, your big players, like we talked about, obviously Austin and Undertaker, Kane, Mankind also getting involved. And so this was actually Mankind kind of, you know, coming down to the ring, you know, Undertaker as well too. There was a lot of storylines with the, this was after not too long after Kane had debuted as well. And so you've got like the kind of brothers storyline that we've talked about and, you know, at this point as well too. And, you know, the family, you know, setting the house on fire, all that different stuff. So, but yeah, so Mankind, it was actually, he went to hit Undertaker, missed, hit Austin. This opened up Austin, and that's how he lost that match. So, you know, you got a lot of these players and stuff like this. And so, and because at this point, like I had said, Undertaker, not a fan of Kane, you know, they were still very much in that storyline and kind of what was happening out. But part of the stipulation for that first blood match was that if Austin had won, Kane would have to set himself on fire. And so very odd stipulation there, like, but you get it in the context of what was happening, like with that whole storyline and the fire. And this is when he was quote afraid of fire, if you remember. And so that part of it made sense, but Undertaker was not going to let Kane set himself on fire, which is why he came down to ringside. Just, it worked at the time, it, you know, all that should not work, but it does. So, but so we get to then, you know, fast forward a little bit here, July 6th. So that this King of the Ring took place. It was June 28th. So really just about 2 weeks later. Now, you've got Austin, actually it was. And so, after King of the Ring the next night. Yes. And we'll get to the Zamboni piece, but Austin just winning the belt the next night on Raw. So Kane literally held it for a night. So, but, and that 2 weeks later, Vince announces that there's going to be a number one contenders match between Kane, Undertaker, and Mankind. And so it kind of, you know, that night on Raw. So trying to figure out, Undertaker actually didn't show up at the match. You had Kane beating up Mankind in the match. It was actually, I went back and watched it. McMahon and Austin were on opposite sides of the commentary table, which they don't do that much anymore. I felt like they may have, like, you know, somebody sitting in the chair next to them, but to have heel and face bickering back and forth over commentary. And it's probably because they've got like a 3-man booth now. It's just interesting because it actually added a lot to like Vince and Austin having a back and forth on the commentary while, you know, they're having this match, but kind of twist on this one.
I'll add one thing to that, which is they also don't do the, hey, let me put the champion on commentary because the match involves the number one challenger. I don't know why they don't do more of that. I mean, I don't know why they don't do a lot of things anymore, but that was one where I'm just like, that doesn't even make sense because, like why wouldn't you? Like, why wouldn't you put Drew McIntyre on commentary? Like, for, you know, a match. Oh, this is interesting. Like, you know, he's talking during, I mean, it just gives you something else going on. And hey, actually, I'm going to save it for the match, but I have a really, really good idea that I actually want to email to them because I think it's an awesome idea, but keep going.
But I'm with you. Yeah. So you have Kane, quote unquote, Kane and Mankind fighting in the ring, Kane beating Mankind, and then Kane, quote unquote, taking off his mask, revealing that he was actually the Undertaker. So the Undertaker then becoming the number one contender. Now, you and I sitting here, you think to ourselves, like, how did the fans or nobody realize that Undertaker was dressed up as Kane, you know, and in this match? And, you know, like, how the hell do you not realize that? So one, of course, the mask helped. But even I was curious this myself. So I went back and watched this, you know, like I said, this match, listen to the commentary. They had the famous red light of the Fiend on the entire match. And so very like it made it actually worked in the context of what they were doing. It is you've got Undertaker in the mask and the full Kane attire, like the red and black, you know, suit, and the light, the red light is on, you know, the entire match. And so even at home, it's hard to recognize that it wasn't Undertaker at the time. And so, yep. Or that it wasn't Kane and it was the Undertaker. And so it kind of, you know, as much as we shit on the red light of the Fiend, this is oddly enough, this is one instance where it worked to actually, you know, keep the magic up, if you will. And then Raw immediately, he took the mask, he pulled the mask back. You saw it was Undertaker, and it had to be less than 5 seconds later, Raw went off the air. And so there was really like, I don't know if they were over time at the time or what was going on. Like there was no time to process what had just happened. So you've got, you know, him being the number one contender for SummerSlam coming up, but we still got a little bit of time before SummerSlam does hit. So of course, as WWE history has told us, you know, you've got your number one contenders. Let's put them as a tag team together to face someone. So
of course,
oddly enough, these two guys winning the tag championships to prove, like, you know, just how deep your roster was in July, you know, end of July, 1998, you had Stone Cold and the Undertaker actually beating the tag champs of Kane and Mankind to win the tag team championship. So they only had the, which I get it. It's classic booking right there, whether we agree with it or not, but they held the belts for maybe 2-3 weeks. And so they ended up winning them, not even two, July 26th, and then losing the belts back to Kane and Mankind on August 10th. And so it's like, why, you know, and this goes back to that. Why do you hotshot it like that when you've got like Austin's, you know, double champ already? It just doesn't make a ton of sense to me, but whatever. So to kind of cap off this story and, you know, really including all the participants of this kind of storyline, Austin, you know, getting to Raw the next week, he actually drove a hearse into the arena, challenging the Undertaker to the fight. And so you had the swap on this one as well, too, where now you had Kane acting as the Undertaker, and he has hair in his face. You couldn't really see the mask. And so, you know, but Austin beating him up, though, and then throwing him in the end, or in the back of the hearse at the end of Raw. As Austin goes to get back into the hearse, the door's locked, and then the camera kind of pans and you see the Undertaker sitting in the driver's seat and the Undertaker drives away. And it kind of adds to this kind of uneasy alliance, if you will, that we didn't really know. Like Undertaker really didn't like Kane at the time, you know, in the storyline. Like we really didn't know where the alliances led. And we'll talk about this in the aftermath as well, too. And kind of, you know, how they were playing that out. You know, Austin had, it's your big players at this time. And so your final shot of that Raw is the Undertaker driving away in the hearse with Kane in the back of the hearse and Austin like confused as to what's going on, because we're playing up, you know, where do the allegiances lie with the Undertaker, and what are you kind of going to get with this match when we get into it? And so it adds that little bit of, are you going to see Kane, you know, could Mankind potentially make an appearance? Cause they've had some back and forth with him as well too. So, you know, a lot of different things going, a lot of converging storylines playing into this one as we're going into this match, I feel like, but also at the same time, like these guys, like you said, who else do you do here? You know, we've covered that ladder match that was just before this one, actually, with Triple H and The Rock. But for this one, though, it just, you've got it. There's really nothing outside of, you got your biggest stars ever. Let's put them in a match. You know, whether we're getting it a whole bunch or not, doesn't matter. This is what we're going with. And let's see what happens.
Which, you know, I don't hate that. You know, it was like, I think it was the Punk Bryan match from last week where we were like, why overbook this? Why can't it just be two alpha males? They're like, I'm better than you. No, I'm better than you. Like, you know, it's okay to just say, hey, the two biggest stars, we're going to just throw them together. It doesn't mean that we, you know, aren't going to like build to it and do some good stuff, but it's okay to just say, I'm the best. No, I'm the best. Well, we're going to find out at SummerSlam who the best is.
Well, and this goes back to your drafts and whatnot. Like you take the best player on the board, like you work with the best people on the board, and this is what you get. And so, yeah.
Yep. All right. So Peacock season 11, 1998 SummerSlam. Jeff picked the timestamp. So this is the first time in Payoff history, 103 episodes in, where we're going to give you seconds to find. So not the 2 hour and 15 minute mark, but the 2 hour, 15 minute mark and 15 second mark.
There you go, man.
Why are you doing this to people?
Hey, I was just trying to help out. We could have given an extended entrance, or we could have just run with this. And so,
some of us have fat fingers and can't get the Apple TV remote to stop on.
Yeah, you and I have not. We have not invested in the new Apple TV remote, and Peacock sucks in this sense. And so, hopefully, no buffering like Money in the Bank, and we can get through this match without any major issues.
Oh, you know, the same thing. It was, I think, Conrad and Jeff Jarrett, or one of his shows, they were doing it too, and the buffering started. They're like, where are you? Well, where are you? Oh, I'm here. So,
yep, I heard that
too. It's not just us. All right. So, 2 hours, 15 minute mark, and 15 seconds. SummerSlam 98, season 11 on Peacock. Same time stamp if you're watching elsewhere in the world. Jeff, are you ready?
Let's do this.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right, Taker looking mean as all hell. I like this Taker look, man.
Face off in the ring. Yep, absolutely. This is very much, it feels odd to say, but 1998 Taker, like, really in his prime in a lot of ways. He was injured, but really is still at the top of his game at this point too.
Yeah. I mean, he's exactly. God, it's okay, just so 98. I mean, just think of what he did 20 years after this, you know, or 15 years.
Yeah, absolutely. After yep. All right. So I got an idea. Go ahead. Yeah. What's your commentary idea or whatever you got here? Yep.
Well, no, not commentary, but so these new Raw and SmackDown sets.
Oh, yeah.
I guess first of all, what do you think of them?
I like the clean look of it. Like,
I do it's too. Just,
I think there's a whole lot of like, and we've already seen it, like a whole lot of like different graphic things you can do, like, you know, very tall. They are leaning a lot into the augmented reality stuff too, but I think you can still do a lot on the screen. It does look really cool.
So I agree. I think I really, really like it a lot. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't love the sets being the same, like, for every show.
Yeah.
But what I'm hoping is that because they have those, you know, just big ass LEDs, they can do some cool stuff with them where it feels different. So here was my idea. And you and I have talked a lot about, you know, gosh, why can't they theme some of these Raws and SmackDowns, mm-hmm. King of the Ring, things like that. And I think even AEW's done a really good job of, you know, creating, whether it was, you know, it was a Fighter Fest recently or some other stuff, just to feel a little bit different. So when I saw these, Austin with a drop toe hold, and now he's got Taker in the worst looking arm bar you've ever seen in your life.
I hesitate to call it an arm bar,
but I wasn't expecting that. So, so what I thought was, because I mean, really those screens, it's just one big screen and it's a blank slate. You can do whatever you want with it. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, what if you did a Nitro theme, where you brought back some old WCW people, maybe you have the NWO, you know, you have Goldberg there, whatever it might be, okay? But you could take that screen and you could actually reconfigure it to be the old Nitro set. It would all be video, but they would walk out. Like, how cool would that look?
And almost doing like a... like designing it to look that way. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Because
you could do the old SmackDown fist if you wanted to do a retro one. I mean, it would all be, you know, obviously it's not 3D, but dude, you could do some really, really cool stuff with that. And I'm like, you could do Nitro, you could do a Halloween Havoc one. You could pick any theme. You could do it. I mean, I know NXT is doing the In Your House, but like, you do an In Your House. So if once every month or once every other month, even if you did a King of the Ring one and you did just the big purple, you know, kind of King of the Ring, like design, like just something to feel a little bit different.
And that would actually make a lot of sense. I think that we've always said, like, you know, or, you know, we've heard it, you know, I think, you know, like the product a lot of time is kind of made for those at home. It feels a lot different when you're live. I mean, it's just a different experience. Doesn't mean it's bad. It's just different, but you know, you don't get to see some of the other things that are kind of happening on the TV with the, you know, the big dog chains or the Alexa Bliss dolls or, you know, like the Asuka masks and things like that. Like, but is that essential when you're live? No, because you get the, you know, the entrance yourself when you're there. So, but yeah, I think that like, and part of it is, here was my biggest disappointment with that first SmackDown was, other than Vince coming out, you know, and, you know, where the hell have you been? Like that it felt like nothing changed. And like they got right back into matches.
Well, because nothing changed.
Right. And so, yeah, it's a good way. It felt like nothing changed because nothing did.
I thought we got right back. And you listen to Stephanie McMahon on some of these, like, you know, business panels, the chief branding officer. And it's like, you said it was going to be like way different. Raw and SmackDown would be way different. It's the same set. It's the same graphics, the same intro. It's the same bullshit.
And I wonder, like, even like, and you and I had talked about it, like, before, just off the air, like, why just give it a season? Like, say, hey, yeah, like that would have been the perfect time to say, we're just going to blow everything up. Like, you know, and what happens is, you know, obviously the biggest difference over that weekend was, you know, John Cena returning, and to just an absolutely, whether some of it was piped in or not, like a absolutely gigantic pop,
massive audience,
pop. Well-deserved, like, but, and even I, you know, and on the flip side though, like Goldberg was definitely getting piped in. And so, and I have not hidden my distaste for Goldberg. Like everything I've read was that he got two contract dates that he had to do, or two contract matches. And this is going to be the second one, which, why? I just don't like, you know, and Lashley has said he wants Brock. And so I will be okay if Goldberg is the stepping stone to Brock. But I get I'm not alone in this category. I just don't want to see Goldberg anymore. You're going to tell me you couldn't find anybody else to put Lashley against, even if the eventual end game could be Brock, like, you know, put him up against somebody. To have him just squash Kofi like he did was really disappointing. You know, they really are not riding high on Kofi anymore, which kind of sucks.
I got so many thoughts tied to this because, you know, part of me is like, you'd be shocked, but you'd also be like, oh, I guess it makes sense if Brock showed up on AEW at some point. You know, I mean, he's a free agent right now. They probably tried to get Brock for SummerSlam and couldn't. You know, I don't know if it's a money thing or creative or whatever, but they didn't get him for Vegas. Okay. So, you know, he is absolutely a free agent and he absolutely likes money. And I don't think he has any loyalty to anyone except maybe Paul Heyman. So who knows? But, yeah, they could not get Brock, and, you know, they've just made the decision that if they're going to use Goldberg, they're going to put him in a title match. And, you know, it's a fresh matchup anytime they do it. I get it. But God, it just feels so, the problem is, it's just, you know, Goldberg is just so limited. I mean, he's going to do a couple moves. He's going to say the same thing about your next. He's going to have the same look. I mean, there's just no depth to the character. There's nothing. I mean, there's just nothing there. Right.
Well,
they never even do an angle. Like, I mean, it's not like, oh, Goldberg's coming back for revenge because Lashley attacked him. No, it's literally just you're next. Okay. So we got Kane just passively walking down to the ring.
Great little set there too. It's very tiny. It's a small walkway, but you got the WWF like kind of logo backlit like that with the gates. Like that's just the Highway to Hell stuff. Like that's really
cool. How good a shape was he in back then?
Okay. Oh my God. Yeah.
He was jacked.
Well, I like legit terrifying. I remember like as a kid, like this was like you had no clue. Like, you know, and that, you know, it's harder for us to spend the disbelief as adults, but like he was legit scary. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. All right, so Taker's telling him to go back to the back there right now.
Well, and I totally agree with your point of like, okay, so there two things happen here. Either like he squashes Lashley, which then you lose all the momentum that Lashley's had over the last, you know, few like 6 months, however long it's been, or he like Lashley squashes him. Like they don't have a match. Like, there's no, like, you know, it's not going to be a technical marvel. It's just, it can't be.
It's hard to imagine Goldberg losing, because that means that he came in and jobbed to McIntyre and jobbed to Lashley, and that'll be his 2021. And I find that hard to believe. So
he doesn't go out on his back. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I had to guess somehow, and I know he has the two matches, but somehow I think he could end up winning. The other thing too, Jeff, is, you know, we have another Saudi show coming at some point. And I don't know when. I don't know if it's November or whatever, but look at what they've done on every show. I mean, every show has had some combination of Goldberg, Taker, Shawn, Triple H, Lesnar. I mean, they've just blown their load every time for that. So I can't imagine that they're going to not, I mean, they're going to have to do something that's special or different. I mean, they're getting what, $50 million to put on the show. And we can talk more about Punk and Brian here, but it's like, assuming that they go to AEW, you know, Lesnar being out of the picture, I'm like, how long until, I think I text you this. I mean, Vince is going to be walking around with a blank check, and he's going to say, hey, Sean, hey, Austin, hey, Taker, I need something here. I believe, and I could be completely wrong. I'm not pretending to be a professional wrestling journalist. I'm just saying that you look at this and you're like, okay, you've got your Goldberg for a couple matches. What else is there? You know, and I mean, it sounds like Rock, maybe Survivor Series. I'm guessing that would be to build to WrestleMania. So maybe that's enough to get you through. And then maybe you get Lesnar back for the Saudi show and you think that's enough. But I'm like, at what point do you, look over at NXT, see Shawn and Triple H sitting there and go, we need something, again, assuming that, I don't think Brian moves the needle. I mean, I love the guy. I don't think he moves the needle as much, but I think Punk, it's like, okay, and they got Sting down there and they're, all these other guys, we got to do something here. But, but this is what brings out the best in Vince and wrestling is when there's competition. And that's why there were so many times from, 2001 to 2021 where the product has just been on autopilot because the TV money's in the bank. It's just been on autopilot. I think they're gonna be forced to do something here. So fighting in the crowd back in the ringside, what'd you have?
I have a few thoughts. Yeah. These guys just kind of fighting all over the place at this point. So we talk about not being able to build stars and then they bring Cena back because Cena is the star. And so I have somewhat, that's my kind of hang up with that is, hey, we say, hey, we can't build new stars, but then they bring back old stars like Goldberg legitimately. And then Cena as well too. So
here's part of my thing on not being able to build new stars because literally they just don't put the rocket on people enough. Yeah. And Jeff, this goes back to Bret Hart. Okay. I mean, Bret Hart, just make him a star, have him beat Flair and hold the title for a year, year and a half, but they didn't, they took it off of him. And then it was the Hogan thing. And then it was Lex and it took a year to get it back. And then he didn't hold it. And they lost the Backlund. Like, with Austin, it was like, he's a star and Rock, he was a star. It's like, even with McIntyre, I mean, do you think that they really gave him every opportunity?
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing it with Reigns now. And guess what? Reigns is a star. I look forward to his matches. He's an absolute bona fide star. But it's, again, Rollins, you kind of stop start with the guy. Owens, you stop start with the guy. McIntyre, Lashley, are they going to, at some point you just got to say, look, we're going to have someone hold the title for a year and we're going to make this guy a star. And if we can't make him a star in a year, that's fine. But you can't do this stop start every 6 months. I mean, it's like McIntyre. Okay. So now he's on to, this has his star now faded and he's just another, upper mid card guy like everyone else. I mean, what are you going to do with Big E in the briefcase? At some point, is he going to cash in and then you're going to give this guy a run because he's over with the, they've done a great job at creating stars. Okay, maybe you can even call them superstars, but what they haven't been able to do is create megastars. And it's easy to look at the roster and go, well, there is no Austin, there is no Rock. Well, we'd never know because none of them have been given the opportunity to just be the guy over a long period of time.
Well, and I wonder, is like, even like Drew right now is feuding with Jinder Mahal. So when you say upper, like, or, you know, lower upper card, like, I, like, that's mid card as far as I'm concerned. Like, but well, and I think
this, you can't tell me, oh, Drew McIntyre, he's a megastar. No, he's not. There is, I will say there are two megastars that will grace your TV this summer, John Cena. And I will put Roman Reigns in that category, but they could still screw it up.
Yeah. Well, and Jinder Mahal started driving the motorcycle on TV, and then all of a sudden there's the motorcycle toys. That was the whole point of that one, which I thought was comical.
AJ Styles, at the time of recording last night, you know, he jobbed on a house show. He lost to Matt Riddle on a house show last night. Okay. So that's another guy. There's your megastar. What's he?
Who's literally one of the best wrestlers on the planet. Like, if you don't have Brian Punk, yeah.
And he's 45 years old. It's not, use him while you can. He should, he should be a megastar, but he's not.
And they're using him to get over almost. Like, you know, it just that part of it makes no sense to me. So, okay. I think you brought up an interesting point here. So yes, Mania 38, we're going to be in Arlington, Texas for this one. So what, like, there are a lot of wrestlers based out of Texas. You got, Undertaker.
This is the big spot in the match.
Oh yeah. Here we go. You got Taker climbing the turnbuckle, Austin on the Spanish announce table.
I mean, he leaves the monitor in, which is just insane. I think he might regret that right now. Taker on top, like doing the old Shane McMahon spot, but he's going to do a leg drop. I mean, my God. And if I'm not mistaken, did Austin get knocked out cold, or was it Taker in this spot? One of them.
I didn't. Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, Austin got his bell rung.
Yeah, the table didn't really break right.
They just kind of shifted slid it off. Yeah. I mean, I just insane. And that was actually like a leg drop. I mean, I'm like, shit, probably a splash or an elbow drop might have been even a little safer. Like, that's just insane.
So with that, we're going to Texas. You got Michaels, you got Taker, you got Austin, all of them, you know, living based in Texas. I mean, Michaels obviously still very involved. I think he's, you know, we saw it in Saudi Arabia, you know, we're too old for this.
Time out real quick. How much better is AEW at acknowledging people's hometown? Like, they're going to Pittsburgh and it's Britt Baker. I just saw an ad about going to Cincy and they're pumping that Moxley's from there. WWE, what? Have they ever done that? I mean, they haven't
hometown
done it
pop.
20, yep. 20 years.
I mean, hometown pop. Yep.
The last time I can remember them acknowledging where anyone was from was Punk. And that was because they kind of had to, with Chicago. I mean, that was 10 years ago. I mean, it's just, why don't they ever do that? Of like, hey, these are real people. Okay. They're not cartoon characters. They're real people. This is where they grew up. And maybe you sell a couple more tickets and you build a show around them. How hard is that?
The fans and the crowd acknowledge it in Twitter, but that's it. Like, WWE themselves, you know, hometown, but yeah, Britt Baker, that's right, a big part of her story. So yeah. So who's,
who do you bring back? So pumping the shows.
If you got your WrestleMania, you figure who is going to be, maybe not necessarily the main event, maybe it's the co-main event, but what superstars, you know, we're going to couch book here. Who do you put in that role? Like, who do you bring back to sell tickets for that?
Dude, there's no one left. Okay, yeah. I mean, Austin's not working again. It sounds like Sean's not. It sounds like Taker's not. What do you have left? You can maybe get one or two more matches ever out of The Rock if you're lucky, and you're probably
Cena, The Rock. Yeah.
No, you get Rock. You're going to get Rock Reigns. Rock's going to do the job and shake his hand afterwards, and that'll probably be the last match he ever wrestles. Okay, yeah. So there's Rock. And then, you know, again, Austin says he doesn't want to wrestle again. They'll put Triple H back out there. They'll probably put Shane McMahon back out there. You know, again, Goldberg, they got his two matches. I mean, what else is there? And there's Lesnar. I mean, there is no one else.
Right.
You know, Hulk Hogan's almost 70. Ric Flair can't wrestle. I mean, Sting, he's with AEW now. I mean, there's just, you go down the list, who is left?
Yeah,
can you maybe get a match out of like a Kevin Nash? I mean, I don't know. Is there like who? Like, I'm being serious. Like, who else is out there that's like a big ass name that can go out and do a match?
I do love posts like retired Kevin Nash. Like, motherfucker loves to shoot. Like, well, I will watch any interview with Kevin Nash at this point. Yeah.
Funny story related to Taker in the match was, cause I couldn't remember what match it was. And I remembered it was WrestleMania 11. You know, Nash was like, well, what are we going to do in this match? He goes, I just got served divorce paper. So you're calling it in the ring, buddy.
Wow. Yeah.
And that was the WrestleMania 11 match. Like, can you believe that? It's crazy.
The behind the scenes stuff. Yeah. His Broken Skulls was really good too.
Go ahead. Luthez press there. So I'll tell you, watching these Monday Night Wars, I think in a lot of ways, the unsung hero, I know it's easy to be like, well, Steve Austin that turned things around. I got to tell you, and I know I'm a Shawn Michaels mark, but it's like, dude, him like just being a huge asshole in real life and just doing like shit on TV that he shouldn't have. And then Vince finally relenting and being like, all right, well, we're desperate and the ratings go up when you do shit like this, so just keep doing it. But it's like, man, to me it's like the Attitude Era is really traces back to Shawn Michaels more than anything else. And then I think it's the screw job which creates Mr. McMahon, and then then Austin being kind of the third part of that. But I'm telling you, I think it all really starts with Shawn, and then what him and Triple H were doing. So Taker kicked out of a kind of a weak stunner. Now there's a choke slam. Taker looks like he's setting up for the tombstone.
Calling for it. Been a pretty physical match.
Yeah, I mean they're out there. They're out there doing their best.
Yep.
You're probably not gonna get a 5-star match out of these two, especially this is Austin post neck issue.
Right.
But, I mean you're still gonna get a good enough match. All right.
Taker blocking a stunner. That looked a little weird.
I'm almost positive that one of these guys was knocked out cold and doesn't remember. And I should know this. I think it was Taker. I think Taker actually does not remember this, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think there's the sad reality is probably a lot of that. he talks about it, and his stuff or the documentary. Yeah,
trivia question for you: longest match in SummerSlam history.
Oh man, good. That's a great one. This one's only about 20. I don't know. Probably was there an Iron Man at some point?
When I tell you, you'd be like, makes sense. Nexus versus Team WWE 2010. It was 35 minutes long. That's
really
the 7-on-7.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So that was the longest. But 3 minutes shorter was Bret and Owen in the cage. That was 32 minutes.
You got that one on the list.
Taker Bret went 28. That was the year before this. Warrior Savage went 28 minutes. My God. That's the one.
We got in this month. It's interesting. We got like a lot of rematches this month. And you said Bret Owen. We actually got that one coming up in a couple weeks here. So spoiler on that. Trying to go for old school. Austin kind of blocking it, ripping him down as well too here. And here we go. Big stunner. Boom. Yep.
That's going to be it, huh?
Slow count there, Earl. Come on. 1, 2, 3.
There you go. So just really clean in the middle of the ring. I mean, kind of hit him with a low blow, but otherwise pretty much just a clean match.
That's it.
And there's your
fans,
match.
Fans are happy. Yeah.
Steve Austin winning a 25 minute match. They're not going to go home sad.
But here you go. You got Undertaker sitting up right away, though. Kind of, and I say not no selling it, but very much just they're both up on their feet already. Undertaker holding the belt. I do appreciate the guy in the back there between them with the shirt that says Goldberg sucks. And look at the sportsmanship here. Is that the smoking skull too? I can't tell. It's got to be.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Is it fair to say that AEW really doesn't do too many like heels and baby faces? They're kind of more like just everyone's kind of in a gray area.
Yeah. Well, or like the fans, they're almost letting the fans run with what they want. Like Moxley isn't a face or a heel. He's just crazy.
Yeah. Like, and I've thought like since the Attitude Era, like that's just the way it should be. Like the NWO, are there good guys, bad guys? Who gives a shit? Like
and they don't talk about a lot, but they got like Jungle Boy who's just gotten over. Like, Kenny Omega is, yes, playing up the asshole heel role. But, so I think it's hit or miss on some guys. But I think that's actually good. Like, they're letting the fans dictate what it should be or shouldn't be. You get your pop. It's like, even when fans were back and people were cheering and they shouldn't have been, there's some like a lot of that, too. So you got Kane coming out as well now, too. Both brothers, the brothers standing together. Yeah. I think it works way more than quit shoving someone down our throat. Like, hey, let's let the guy, let's, have Jungle Boy beat Christian let Christian do the job here, how it should be, get the number one contender spot, and the fans, that's how it should be. Like, it makes sense. Like, we don't want to see Christian to win it. We want to see Jungle Boy go at it. Even if he loses, at least they gave the fans what they wanted.
Yeah. And again, I like that better. And that just reminded me as we, again, watched the end of this, I was just like, yeah, you know what? Okay. These are two good guys. Fine. Whatever. But like, I don't know why, like in 2021, everything needs to be like heel and baby face. And I think that's WWE still booking that. And I'm not going to blame him solely for it, but I think like Vince and Bruce, I think they're just like old school, wrestling, traditionalists. And it's like, oh, you got a heel and you got a baby face. You got good and you got evil. I thought Lashley was kind of like getting over and it was like, oh no, we got to make him a heel. And like, well, why can't he just be a badass? And I really just don't understand that thinking at all. Like, why not let the fans decide? But just a thought there. So let's jump into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right. Initial thoughts.
Physical, pretty decent match. I say, like, knowing that, it very much a stepping stone for a lot of other stuff that's going to come. And so, but I think just overall, like, it feels odd, but like, it was a SummerSlam. It was a fairly decent SummerSlam main event. It wasn't great in my opinion, but it was, pretty good.
I'm kind of the same thing as you. Wasn't a great match. I mean, it's not going to be one of your best SummerSlam matches of all time by any means. But again, good. I think that in some ways my takeaway is more the fact that I can't believe how shitty this card was. At a really good time in wrestling. It's just, for whatever reason, I mean, you had two matches, that's it, on the second biggest show of the year, and everything else was just throwaway garbage. So, there's a lot that happened after the storyline standpoint, huh?
Yeah. So what do we got here? What's going on here is like the feud really continued between these guys, but, and of course revealed eventually that Undertaker and Kane were both working with Vince to try and get like the title off of Austin. We got a match. It was actually In Your House Breakdown that September, between Austin and both of them were, Undertaker and Kane were not allowed to pin each other. And so it ended up with both men pinning Austin at the same time. So Austin lost the belt, but nobody winning the belt. This is then the following evening, Detroit, Michigan, my hometown, is when you get the Zamboni spot.
That's right.
And
that's
so,
right.
Yeah. And so this was after the belt was vacated and they pinned him. Big spot in the ring, Vince making the speech, Undertaker and Kane are there. They're worried about Austin getting back into the ring. So you have the quote Detroit police kind of protecting him. And then Austin driving the Zamboni into the into the arena and into the ring. This is when you get the famous don't let him in here. Or McMahon screaming as the fans are just absolutely losing their shit at Austin, driving the Zamboni. I was there. I do remember this vividly. And so even to this day, it was just the sound of the Zamboni hitting the ring is not, you can't recreate that sound. So it just, very interesting. And so, but then of course, after all this, because this is wrestling, you have Austin being the special guest referee for a match between the Undertaker and Kane for the vacant title. This was at In Your House Judgment Day or Judgment Day In Your House that October. The biggest thing was that he would be fired if he did not count the fall or the pin. And so you had Austin attacking and counting both men or attacking the Undertaker. Just really at the end of this, he declared himself the championship, and taking the championship, but McMahon firing him. And this is where, again, like just the era of, Stone Cold and his absolute just the height of who he was, being fired. So the title vacated again, at this point. And this is where you got the, Austin kidnapping McMahon. And we're getting the holding him at gunpoint spot and us getting the famous, Bang 316 gun spot happening right after this as well too. This is where we learn that Shane actually had hired.
Serious question: do we know, was that shoot piss or working piss?
Well, to this day, we'll never know. I think that's just part of the wrestling.
I don't
magic.
Know if he's ever come out and said, or if Bruce has ever said on his podcast or anything what they did. I really don't know. Kind of curious.
Maybe a good question.
Maybe
for
someone
us to
tell
ask
us on Twitter.
Yeah, tweet it. Yeah,
actually, very absolutely. Curious.
So, but then after this, then, you know, so Austin kind of dealing with that, Shane was the one that had re-signed Austin, but this is where you get Undertaker reuniting with Paul Bearer at this point, and they starting the formation of the Ministry of Darkness. And of course we had the Brood, which was, you know, Christian, Edge and Gangrel. You had the Acolytes, Midian, Viscera, you know, and actually it worked because Undertaker was hurt at this point, and so he wasn't really able to wrestle. So he was able to use the Ministry. And you know, him wanting to take over, and you know, we will talk about this, you know, I'm sure later, but, you know, having the Ministry and corporation going at it against each other, you have the Higher Power, who of course we'll keep that surprise for who the Higher Power is for a different episode. And kind of talking about that and where that goes, but yeah. And so just, I mean, really just a continuation between, like you said, Mr. McMahon and Austin. You got the Undertaker as well too, kind of breaking off and him taking on Vince. So just a lot happening. Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. Scores, ready for this? PWI, or reviews and then our scores. PWI for 1998, Austin was numero uno, number one. And so, and Undertaker was number five, which absolutely makes sense after the year that, you know, both these guys had. Austin is number one, is makes all the sense in the world. So, that I get. And so, you got from the torch here, Wade, a very good match in terms of energy level, execution, diversity of moves, pacing, and psychology. The only thing lacking at times was fan heat, since the crowd didn't seem to want to take sides. 4 stars. And so SummerSlam was a pretty,
so he went pretty high on that.
Yep. SummerSlam was a pretty good show, and clearly everyone from the top to bottom worked very hard. Steve Austin continues to set a company standard for effort. The table spot with his neck on the line was frightening, which, yep, we agree. So, Dave, your favorite person, 3.5 stars on this one. In the main event, both Steve Austin and Undertaker put on about as good a match as would be possible, given that both men are banged up. Undertaker from chronic ankle problems and Austin from some sort of injury suffered early in the match. So the knockout could have actually been earlier than we said. So you got 4, 3.5, some fairly high marks here. And so, Tom, what are you giving this one?
I'm giving this a 6.
Okay.
Which I feel like is one of the lower numbers I've given in a while. I mean, there's nothing about the match where you're like, wow, that was a really, really good match. I mean, it benefits from being in the Garden, being the main event of SummerSlam, being for the world title, having a clean finish, you know, crowd was into it at the end, but yeah, it's just nothing about it that's like really stands out. And the storyline, again, the Attitude Era was perfect and everything was amazing. And Austin, and I mean, these two were not Taker and Shawn. Mm-hmm. These two were not Bret and Austin. So, you know, it's just, sometimes it just, these two weren't Austin and Rock, right? I mean, they just weren't that great rivalry for whatever reason. I mean, they've wrestled before when Austin was a heel back in, like, you know, I don't know, 97, probably 96, whenever that was. These two just never had great matches, and it was never really a great feud. And, I don't know. It just didn't mesh for me. And again, there's nothing about the storyline where you're like, oh, this was fantastic. So 6.5, not a memorable feud, not a great match between the two. Nothing about this was really, really clicked for me. What about you?
Yeah, I had actually thought 6.5 from, you know, even though you said 6, because I felt like this is, by no means was it a culmination. This was very much a stepping stone, or you know, kind of a middle ground for what we were going to continue to get. And so that just, you know, it doesn't mean it was a bad match, but I think just in regards to, you know, it was very much a, we knew we were getting more of this moving forward. So, and knowing what came after this, like it's hard, you know, it might, and people might, oh, it's pretty low. Like the in-ring work. Yeah. I'd probably, you know, give it a little bit higher because it was very well paced. It was very fast. It was very good, but to, you know, kind of do this, you know, to look at it from where we are now, kind of know what came after the fact. Like I just, it very much the payoff itself from this was not great. So, yeah, it just, I 6.5, just because it just makes the most sense. So, yeah, but.
We're, good stuff. We're on the same page. Yeah. We're on the same page on that one then.
Cool. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, dude. Well, good episode.
Of course. Yeah. We got big things lined up. We're still on the highway to hell, you know, ready to, you know, keep moving towards SummerSlam. We got a takeover now. We got Rampage coming up. We got big things coming up in the future here. Yep.
Well, I'm going to give myself a Barry Horowitz pat on the back. I'd good like job. For you to do that. Oh, by the way, yep. Barry Horowitz, fan of the payoff, former guest. I think we'll have him on again, actually. We have some other matches with him that we recorded that day. He said they're working on something for the network.
Yeah, he did. Yep. And so he's back in the news a little bit here. Yeah. Talking about a few different things. Yeah. So it should be exciting.
That'd be kind of cool. So, all right, that's it.
Send him home happy. Yeah.
We'll see you next week on an all new episode of The Payoff.